From the Autoline Studios, here is your host, John McElroy.
Thanks for tuning in to today's show. The discussion's going to be all about manufacturing advances, technological advances, and trends that we see coming. And I've got three experts to talk about it, including Michael Robinet, the managing director of IHS Automotive, Jay Barron, the CEO for the Center of Automotive Research in Ann Arbor, and Lori Harbor, the president of Harbor Results. Great having you all here.
Thanks, John.
We keep hearing in the United States that manufacturing is making a comeback. And I want to get your opinion on that. Jay, why don't I start with you? Is manufacturing truly making a comeback
here? It certainly is, especially in auto. We're producing a lot of cars now, and a lot of them here in the upper Midwest. We've had the expansion in the southeastern region as well. But this is a great place to produce vehicles. We have the established supply chains, and we have some state-of-the-art factories. So this part of the industry is doing very well.
You see it that way, Michael?
I would agree. There's no way that we could gain this much volume that quickly without truly a manufacturing renaissance, especially after the automotive recession of 2009 and into 2010. The only way that we've been able to come back is really mastering the manufacturing, becoming more flexible, and really being able to do more with less.
Lori, you really pay attention to what's going on in the supplier industry. Do you see it on that side of the business as well?
Absolutely. And the suppliers are working really hard to get as much product out as they can. And it's kind of exciting to see them looking at, you know, throughput and lean manufacturing techniques to try to get more capacity, because nobody really wants to make huge investment in capital. So how can we do it, like Michael said, by doing, you know, more with the same and be able to do it more efficiently?
We, of course, have seen a collapse in the automotive business in the 2008-2009 timeframe. It's been climbing back since then. So, of course, we've seen an increase. But are we seeing more manufacturing coming back on shore?
I think you are seeing pieces of it come back on shore. You know, prior to manufacturing, you have to have technology development. You've got to have a supply chain. You look at the resources in Michigan in particular around technical development of the auto industry. There is no place in the world, perhaps, with this kind of a density of technology development, and you need that. Then you get into some of the areas that Lori's involved with the tooling industry. A lot of it's right here. So these are the seeds to manufacturing, and we have all of the foundation to really support that.
I think there's no doubt that we've been able to gain this quickly because of some of the extra flexibility that's been added to the framework, and as well as supply base. So, for instance, the vehicle manufacturers, they have fewer platforms, which means that they're probably more flexible with fewer build processes. So they can literally jam more vehicles into a facility, whereas before you'd have a lot of sort of pigeonholed facilities. I can only make one vehicle, and if that vehicle doesn't sell, then I got to lay my people off. Those days are, for the most part, behind us.
So we're seeing plants build multiple models, not just one.
There's no doubt. I remember we did some work many, many years ago before the Auto Pact in Windsor. There were plants that were making 9 different vehicles because of tariffs, you couldn't get them over the border. Mm. We're almost back in some respects to that level, but in a much more flexible fashion because we're off of fewer build processes and fewer platforms.
Do you see onshoring on the part of the suppliers as well?
Definitely, especially as Jay said, on the tooling side. We're seeing a lot more tools that used to be made in China, partially because labor rates are rising, all costs are rising overseas for China. So that's one of the reasons. But the other thing is, as Mike talked about, is with that complexity at the plant level and just within mass customization of the vehicle for this younger generation, we're seeing 20-30% more tools per vehicle than we used to see. Frankly, lead times are so tight, I can't get it off the boat fast enough, right? So as everybody works to do so many vehicles in such a short period of time, it's making that option less and less viable. And so we're seeing more manufacturing here in those areas of the business.
You know, the other piece of that, John, is, and I've always said, complexity is good for our industry. Complexity is not good for the low-cost countries. The engineering base here in Michigan is second to none in the world. We have excellent engineering. If you keep making cars complicated, the engineering really has to be done where the heart of the industry is.
Right.
So we do more of engineering. We maybe outsource some of the labor-intensive aspects of tooling or manufacturing. But when it comes to engineering the vehicle, you know, we have lots of new materials. We have new joining. There's so much complexity going on in the industry right now. We have the fuel economy to thank for some of that. And so much uncertainty, so that we have lower volumes and bigger model mix and so on, that really calls for a lot of technology to roll this out. And I think, frankly, that's good for where you have these intellectual centers like we have here in Michigan.
We see the shale revolution having produced all this natural gas and propane that can be used, and it's driven down energy costs. Is that playing a role in automotive at all in terms of onshoring manufacturing?
I think that might play some role, but we get a work back a little bit. It comes down to basic economics. I think what you've seen a lot of vehicles that used to be imported from Japan or Korea or Germany now being built here.
Or Mexico.
Right. And it's not because these companies are benevolent and saying, oh, I got pressure from Washington or from Mexico City and need to move production. That's not the case at all. It's all about currency. And also, Lori mentioned earlier, logistics. So currency, if I know it's going to cost me the same amount of money for the next 5 years to build, let's say, a Toyota Camry or some other vehicle, that's much better than importing it. And therefore, my costs are going up and down with the currency. And logistics as well. Logistics costs are going up very, very quickly, especially deep sea logistics. And so when you're sort of at the mercy of that, you want a more stable cost base, and that's exactly why we've seen this renaissance of more capacity moving here.
You do have to acknowledge the energy cost, but the energy costs in Mexico are not lower than ours. They're relatively high.
Yeah.
So the growth of production in Mexico, which is really going at a phenomenal pace, to some extent maybe at the expense of the United States, it's really driven by other factors than energy, because energy could play a role. It's connected more political to free trade agreements and other factors like that. Mm-hmm.
What about the role of unions in all this, specifically the UAW? We've seen them prevented from striking because of the bailout agreement. As part of the whole bailout process, too, the union had to agree to a lot more flexibility. Some of it they were doing on their own with the companies and negotiating before the bailout. But, Michael, what's your view? Is the UAW holding back the Detroit automakers as they try to compete?
I would say a decade ago, yes. Right now, probably not. In fact, it's funny, you've seen UAW facilities really open the doors to say, listen, we would like a third crew or third shift, knowing that if they didn't do that, they would give the OEM an excuse to go down to Mexico and open up a new plant. So they would much rather have a stronger membership, a more fully employed membership. That's definitely in their wheelhouse. They do not want to give the OEMs a reason to ship production somewhere else.
There's definitely a lot of efficiencies that they made, like you said, 10, 12 years ago. I mean, there's plants of the OEMs that are as productive or even more so than a Toyota facility or a Nissan facility. So there was a lot of progression that was made there and a lot of movement to really be part of the process and not be part of the ones that are left behind.
Of course, we see the foreign automakers operating in the U.S. pretty much doing everything in their power to keep the union out. So if Big Three or Detroit Three plants can be so efficient, then why not let the union in?
Well, it's kind of the devil you know versus the devil you don't. The let's face it, the D3, the Detroit Three, have been working with unions, since the 40s or so. So, and these other companies, they don't have them to bring them into the equation. It's just something that they don't know what complexity that's going to add to making decisions and how quickly they can move. So it's understandable why there's some resistance, at least by most of the OEMs anyways.
And they're as competitive as the big three plants. I mean, they're paying at the same scale. The issue's the retirement fund. I mean, that's where the big issue was years ago when they did the negotiations. So they're as competitive when it comes to pay. And frankly, a lot of people say, they listen to me, I'm empowered, I don't need a union.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the materials that the auto industry is turning to now. Jay, you mentioned that earlier, the corporate average fuel economy regulations really start to ramp up next year through 2020 to even 25.
5% a year. And it's not just the fuel economy, it's also the emissions, which are ramping down from regulations from the EPA. So it's NHTSA and CAFE, and it's EPA and emissions. And you know, there's several technologies you can do to address these issues. Obviously, powertrain, one of them, and electrification and hybrids. But one of the major technologies clearly is lightweighting, which is bringing new materials into the factory. With respect to the powertrain, you can go to various types of hybrids and electrification, but the current gasoline engine can only go so far, and it's kind of the benefits are tapering off. So I really think there's an awful lot of attention being aimed at lightweighting. The Ford F-150, of course, has been the big earthshaker at the auto show, Just going from steel to an aluminum body changes a lot of things in the factory. And then most companies see us going to it from aluminum to other mixed materials with more magnesium, more titanium, and lots of composites and such. Well, this changes the way you form these parts, the way you join these parts, the way you paint these parts. It really changes the whole supply chain in the way you design these parts. So a lot going on trying to address this. And we have a couple of factories. Sterling Heights is an example at Chrysler, which is a state-of-the-art factory. And of course, Ford's going through this conversion now as they get to the aluminum truck. But there's a lot of lot going on, and there's a lot of complexity that's going to play out.
I think what Jade mentioned earlier in terms of the fuel economy, this whole lightweighting movement is going to be the gift that keeps on giving for at least the next decade. At least the next decade. Because as was mentioned, we've really kind of, now I wouldn't say we've hit the crescendo, but we've done a lot on the powertrain side. The real movement in terms of improving fuel economy and lowering emissions is going to have to come through lightweighting. And everybody's going to have to understand that. And we've talked to various OEMs, and they're actually very concerned. They know what's going to happen for the next cycle, so the next 5-6 years. They have no idea what's going to happen after that. So the whole idea of a build process, I build my vehicle in a certain way, is going to change when I start to add new materials. And I start to employ more aluminum and more magnesium and carbon fiber. It just changes complexity tremendously. So there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of risk in what's happening in the industry over the next 10 years.
Lori, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and the push down of the supply base is significant because they're dealing with it at a very high degree of complexity. So, some of the OEMs today have 50-60% of their volume on vehicles that range between 70 and 100,000 in total annual volume. So the complexity in those plants just multiplies itself down at the supplier. So when you deal with multiple materials, multiple processes for manufacturing, they're all trying to figure out how we do it, which back to Jay's point about China, is there's a real challenge for them to process that kind of complexity. It's a very foreign thing to them, and they struggle to problem solve. Like, our teams tend to be able to get in and solve problems pretty quickly. So
the auto industry, despite all these recalls that we read about, really has a pretty good track record when it comes to quality. But, what I know about manufacturing is as you introduce change, you introduce variability, and variability is bad for quality. Mm-hmm. Will the move to these materials affect the quality, the durability of these vehicles?
Well, there's definitely a lot of work at those, both particularly the supplier level, since they're providing a lot of parts that then potentially could end up in some of these recall situations, where they're doing R&D to again, figure out how to process them, avoid damages. The aluminum thing is a huge deal because it's a very different material to deal with. A worker has a belt on and he ruins that piece of material, or that tool that's made out of aluminum. So there's a whole set of different training and education that has to go on at the employee level, which makes hiring and finding the right people very challenging because you need a different level of skill than we might have needed 20 years ago.
Jay, what's your thought on that? Because I'm sure good cars will still get shipped to dealers. But as you know, that might involve a whole lot of repair and replacement the plant.
Right.
So will not introducing all these new materials impact quality?
There's the potential to impact quality. The auto companies will not ship unsafe cars that are unsafe crashworthy-wise. They will not do that. They will manage that process. I think what this really does is it opens up the door, as Lori's pointing out. A lot of this technology is going to come in from the supply base. Mm. The aluminum companies, and it's not just aluminum, it's composites companies. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of composite companies out there ready to sell their resins and polymers and such. And along with that comes the joining technologies, the adhesives, the coatings. There's a lot of technology. And the auto companies are very lean these days. They need help. So one of the things that this fuel economy drive has done is it's opened the door to bringing in the technology providers from the supply base. So, Michael referred to this as the gift that keeps on giving. We refer to it as free beer. Everybody wins. Lighter cars drive better. You get better fuel economy. It's a great opportunity for the suppliers to get engaged and share their technology. There may be some bumps in the road. We like to introduce technology incrementally. Engineers tend to be conservative and want to go one step at a time. This is why the F-150 was so dramatic, because it was a whole body and a high-volume facility going to aluminum. We normally would like to go aluminum hoods, aluminum deck lid, maybe aluminum doors, but this takes 25 years. Ford did it all in one big step. So it'll be interesting to watch that rollout. They have a lot to learn about processing a huge and high-volume aluminum facility, but they will work those details out.
You know, you mentioned quality, and let's face it, if you aren't building a high-quality vehicle in this market, you probably are not in this market. So quality is now changed to more of a perception. Is it content? Is it styling? Is it what's the brand image? What's my service at the dealer? How am I treated? Quality has now become something completely different. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, the suppliers are going to drive a lot of that new technology. You know, we've talked often that the suppliers don't alienate your suppliers, because now they have many other choices. They can go see your customer down the road and give them the technology instead. So the playing field's evening out quite a bit, and it's actually really interesting to see how it all works out.
Jay, you mentioned all this processing and manufacturing technology that's going on. I want to ask you about 3D printing. Mm. Some call it additive manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on this? There's a big buzz around it, but bring us up to date with your knowledge of what the auto industry is doing with this.
First of all, it's a wonderful technology. Frankly, it's not really brand new. It's been around for a while. They've made some advancements to this. I've seen it used for tooling. For low-volume tooling, you can't make a high-volume tooling because the durability of the materials comes into question. But in terms of its flexibility and ability to make tools or refine tools or repair tools, it's a fantastic technology. It can also make conformal molds where you can have built-in cooling channels and things that you can't do with a material with a process where you whittle away material. So it's got some unique capabilities. It's always been well-known for a prototype kind of a process because it's slow. It's slow, and it tends to work within a small window. I don't think we're going to see any big dramatic implementation of this technology in any high-volume production process anytime soon. It's good for prototype, maybe for low volume. It's good for flexibility if you can make a variety of different parts and so on. It will continue to grow in the industry, but I don't think it's going to be as earth-shaking as some of the other technologies that are coming in around these new materials.
Other thoughts on 3D?
3D, possibly, I guess my understanding of that is not quite as good as it should be, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I think in terms of some of this material substitution as a derivative, it's how quickly we can get carbon fiber cycle time down. I think that that's going to be a big driver for the next cycle in terms. And so 3D may not have a part in that, but I think that carbon fiber is going to have a big deal.
And, of course, BMW has made a huge commitment
right.
to carbon fiber with its i3 electric car and its i8 hybrid. And, boy, talk about a big learning curve. There's a huge one there in making a full body out of carbon fiber.
And they're all in. They are all in. Mm-hmm.
John, we have BMW at management briefing seminars this year with the i3 that we'll be talking about the design of that structure. And there's little doubt that BMW is a world leader on carbon fiber, particularly because of that vehicle. Of course, under it is an aluminum substructure, chassis and such. we have been using sort of the pulse that, you know, carbon fiber is somewhere in the order of $10 a pound, 10, 11 bucks a pound, and, of course, steel's under a buck a pound. So there's a big gap there. Of course, you don't replace a pound with a pound, but there's still a big gap there. And a lot of that's processing cost as well as the carbon cost. But the rule of thumb has been if we can get the cost down to maybe $5 a pound, it might become viable for higher volume vehicles. But I think part of the BMW philosophy, of course, was they used a very expensive material on a 100% electric vehicle. The weight reduction value of a BEV is worth a lot more than it is for a conventional car because batteries are very expensive. So they had certain objectives.
Meaning that if you make the car lighter, you don't have to put as many batteries in, and you take battery cost out faster than
correct.
You add
That's
it with
true.
The carbon fiber.
That is correct. Or actually what they would say is we get more range. We keep all the batteries in, but we just get more range is really what they'll tell you, yeah.
John, I just want to add one thing to the 3D printing. We're actually seeing more of that in the supplier side, again, partially because of tight lead times. Suppliers are being asked to come up with prototype parts on things that, frankly, tools haven't even been kicked off on yet. So it's very difficult. We're seeing actually more aluminum prototype tools being made where we kind of had seen that go away, and now they're coming back a little bit because we're trying to kind of put an elephant through a snake with all these launches in the system that we don't have people and resources to do. So we have a couple customers who are absolutely dedicated to 3D, making tools at higher volumes than what people may think, and are running parts consistently. So the lower these volumes get with the higher degree of complexity, the more that becomes an issue. And frankly, it's probably a little higher in other industries than it is automotive. Automotive, in this case, is probably not standing in line first to get as much of the technology. But we see a lot in medical and in aerospace.
Well, and again, medical and aerospace don't have the manufacturing volumes that automotive does.
Right.
And but going back to what you were just saying, then I got to believe this ties into the increased use of 3D printing with suppliers. Does this get back to what you were talking about before? So many more model variations that need so many more tools, and boy, the tooling industry has got to love it, but I'm sure they're pulling their hair out at the same time trying to get the job done.
Well, when we did our study last fall, we talked about 20% more tools per vehicle than there was 10 years ago. Now, as we've been presenting to all the OEMs, they're telling us, yeah, and it's going to be another 20% in the next 5 years.
And what's driving that?
It's all of that mass customization. It's take rates of 1,000 to 5,000 on one piece of technology on a vehicle. So the, you know, the days when Honda would spit out the SE and the LE and the every one of them had the same features, not so much anymore. And even Honda and Toyota and Nissan saying, we're adding that complexity because we've lost some market share. We didn't have some technology, we didn't have some features. So, and the other big push that affects North American manufacturing is those companies, because of the complexity, are saying, I don't have four models here anymore, I have 30. And I'm making the vast majority of my tools still in Japan. And because I'm going to customize more, there's no need to make them in Japan anymore. So we got all this pressure coming to North America for the tooling side of it. And, you know, these companies are spending $2 to $3 billion a year on tooling. If that goes up another 25%, when you add in the complexity of the part, so that tool, although we think tool cost has gone down dramatically, look at a bumper fascia from 15 years ago and look at it today. There's no way that tool cost went down, right? So that's all driving this, and people are looking at it much differently than they used to. And as you talk about technology, what can we do in the tool to make that part easier to manufacture? How do I get cycle times down?
Yeah,
how do I process?
Cadence is a cadence also in the industry. I mean, we used to have, what, 6-7 year cadence, maybe with a mid-cycle.
And explain that a second for people who don't understand.
Cadence is essentially how often you switch your vehicles over, a major revision of a vehicle. And it used to be 6-7 years. I can remember Caprices and Impalas that would go for 9 or 10 years. And then you'd have a mid-cycle enhancement, or an MCE, as they call it. Do front and rear end, maybe the odd door panel or something, or fender. But now you've got vehicle manufacturers are checking all the boxes. I got a problem here. I got a problem here. They're fixing everything 3 years into the vehicle. So, and that adds to the complexity of tooling, because every time there's a new part, there's probably a new tool somewhere along the way.
John, the other factor driving up cadence, of course, is with this technology, with the push for new technologies to get fuel economy. You can't, if you have a technology that can improve fuel economy, you can't wait 2 or 3 years to implement it. No. You're going to roll it out now.
Yeah.
So you're going to see faster cadence on powertrain as well as the body. Because it's all a matter of staying above the minimum required CAFE line.
And when you think about, I mean, like your phone, how it changes, you buy one 3 months later, it's a new one, right? Well, I was in China 2 weeks ago, and the lighting systems that are going into vehicles today, you know, as soon as Audi puts one in, then Cadillac does it, then somebody has to replace that. And that, it was a huge mid-cycle enhancement change. Tools used to take 6-7 tools to make a headlamp assembly, 29 tools on one headlamp assembly that I saw last week. And the light piping complexity of those edges to get that reflection is amazing. So we're not, you know, decontenting these vehicles. We're adding much, much more complexity. And so,
well, the designers love making these kinds of changes. They love bringing that kind of technology in. Jay, we're getting down to the very end. Anything that we haven't covered yet? What excites you about what you see coming in manufacturing?
One thing I like, though, is, like I said, complexity is good for us. This is an engineering manufacturing industry, if there ever was one. We don't want to just be somebody that makes stuff that somebody else tells us how to make it. We want to engineer it. We want to develop it. We want to design it. And we have the supply base around here in the upper Midwest to support it. So all this technology, I mean, using headlights as a major styling feature is what you're describing, is really a big deal. And it doesn't affect the tooling, just the tooling. It affects a lot of different suppliers. So this is a great opportunity to bring the industry together. We've been talking with the state auto executive, Nigel Francis, we're talking to others about we've got to develop mechanisms that bring the industry together to collaborate, to communicate, to work more cohesively. It's not a top-down industry anymore. It's really a great big industry that's got to work together in some kind of a fashion and bring them together.
Michael, anything out there real quick?
I just love the fact that not all the plants, but 70% of the production by the end of this year, 2014, is probably going to be made on a three-career, three-shift basis. That basically means that we've pushed to the very edge. There's a couple more plants we can shift over, but it's incremental. Now we're talking about new brick and mortar. And that's exciting to think about where we were 5 years ago, that we are now at the prospect, and certainly on the supplier side, but definitely on the vehicle manufacturing side, new brick and mortar is coming.
And super quick, anything that really excites you?
I'm just excited to see my manufacturing clients actually work on the manufacturing stuff they should have been working on 15 years ago, trying to get more out of the same. So their challenge is people, skill, and manufacturing. That's the challenge.
Yeah.
Well, this is all good news. Three-shift operations, that means a lot of profits, means that we need more jobs. We just got to get the right skills lined up so people can get those jobs.
Right.
Michael Robinette, really want to thank you for being here. Jay Barron, you as well. Lori Harbor, great discussion. It's very interesting what's going on in manufacturing. And I hope the audience appreciates that, how much wealth this drives through society, and at many different levels of society, too. It's such a critically important thing. You mentioned, the tooling, then to the suppliers, then to the automakers themselves. You know, then you get to the dealerships and everything like that. But it really starts with the manufacturing process. And I want to thank you all for having come in today and shared your thoughts with it. And I want to thank all of you for having tuned in.